So far in class, we've discussed fairly thoroughly most of the sections dealing with equilibrium. So we've talked about it somewhat in theory. We've talked about equilibrium constants, Q and K. We've talked about relating Q and K together to determine which way a reaction will occur. We even did do an ice problem, an initial change equilibrium type of calculation. But we haven't done much with that yet. That's one of the main areas that we need to explore further to complete the equilibrium chapter. And then there is, I think it's section 2, I can't quite visualize it without looking, but there's a section where after talking about what equilibrium constants are, it talks about, well, what if you add reactions together? What if the reaction reverses? So those are examples that are going to make more sense once we do a few what I call ice problems. So I'd like to now go to that section where we do equilibrium problems. These, what are the initial conditions? How might things change? And therefore, what are the end concentrations going to be? In order to do this, I want to use one of the most important equilibrium problems you're going to do all quarter, which is about acids and bases. So acid-base chemistry is equilibrium chemistry, because substances that let go of an H plus can grab that H plus back again. And that might be a very rapid process. How much time it spends off versus on? Well, that's what equilibrium is. And that affects how that acid is going to behave. So let me step back and let me just check, because I don't remember now. Sorry, let me just quickly go through the lecture notes. Have we talked this quarter about what an Arrhenius acid and base is versus a Brunsted-Lowry acid and base is?
I don't think that. Does that sound familiar?
You mentioned it during a lecture, but I don't think you write it down in the notes.
Okay, that might have been the Chem 12 class. That's why I wanted to just check, because I know I did it in one of the classes. So I have not done that discussion with you all yet. Not this quarter. Okay.
You haven't written it down in the notes.
Okay, no problem. Then that's what we're going to do first. So this means, yes, I'm moving on to the acid and base chapter, but I'm not going to get deep into the acid base chapter. I'm just going to go through some of the essentials, like what are acids and bases, as soon as the silly iPad will decide to behave. The most rudimentary definition of an acid or a base, the one you might have learned first whenever you started learning about chemistry, is the Arrhenius definition of acids and bases. And under that definition, an acid dissociates to form H+, and a base dissociates to form OH minus. Why? Why do we have this definition?
Is it donation and receiver or something?
I think you're thinking maybe of one of the other definitions. It's this. It's what's known as the auto-ionization of water, which says that water all by itself will from time to time dissociate to produce H plus and OH minus ions. Now, this is not a very favorable reaction. And in fact, we can write what is known as the Kw of this reaction. So remember that when we write equilibrium constants, pure solids and liquids are not included in the expression because they have activities of one. So I know that I kind of danced around that activity topic, but that is the reason that it's because equilibrium constants are actually related to activity that we ignore the pure solids and pure liquids. So if we were writing Kw, that means it would be H plus times OH minus concentration. And at 25 degrees Celsius, this happens to have a value of 1.0 times 10 to the negative 14. The reason I say at 25 degrees Celsius is because it changes with temperature, which I know you're going to think, oh God, there he goes again with that thing. But, you know, it's going to show up in kinetics again. The graph, you know, the one that says at some temperature, blah-diddy-blah-diddy-blah, you have enough molecules to do something. Yeah, so that could be not just evaporate or condense, that could be to dissociate as well. So imagine that we had the bond dissociation energy. Which is not the only energy involved here, but we'll get to the scarier details later. But just to make my life simple, let's just say that's all that matters. The fact that we're trying to break a bond. So that's going to require a certain amount of energy. But at any temperature, some molecules of water will be able to dissociate. At any temperature, some fraction of molecules will be able to dissociate. Then what I said about temperature. So, okay, this is, let's say, medium temperature. If we go to high temperature, high T, well, then we're going to have more molecules involved. So that means Kw increases. Now later on, that's going to lead to a really fussy discussion about pH. And I need to, because of today's lecture, I need to at least define what pH is. So the potential of hydrogen is defined as the negative base 10 log of the concentration of H+. So LOG usually means LOG 10. The base 10 log of some value. Most calculators will have ln for the natural log, which is based off of a different number, E. Old school texts and calculators. I'm talking like back in the dinosaur age, back when I was around. Some of them used to say log, but they meant natural log. That's not much the case anymore, but I'm just trying to say, get familiar with your calculator, because you will be using that log button. Okay, so we have this definition of acid and base. Why? Because lots of stuff happens in water, and a lot of things happen because of this balance of H plus and OH minus, which when you put them together makes water. And so it doesn't cover all acids and bases, though, and I want to briefly mention this other definition. Which, let me go to the next page because it would make sense to show an example.
Professor?
Yep.
So is that meant to be an equal sign next to pH?
No, that's a defined as.
Okay.
Triple equal.
I see.
Okay. So here is the next definition. The Bernstein-Lowry. And here's the definition. An acid dissociates to produce H+, which means it's the same as an Arrhenius acid. But here's where the definitions differ. A base reacts to accept H+, which, let me, I'm sorry I didn't make the room ahead of time, but I just remembered there's another terminology that sometimes people use, which is that for a Bernstein-Lowry acid, we say that it is a proton donor. And for the base, we say it is a proton acceptor. And what is a proton? Well, think about it. What is a hydrogen atom? If we wrote the atomic symbol, most hydrogen is in the format of H1, meaning one proton, no neutrons, and it has one electron. So if you lose the electron, so lose, say, minus electron, what do we then have? Just a proton that's positively charged. This is a nuclear symbol. And maybe you've had a brief introduction to nuclear chemistry in the past, and you're not going to see any more nuclear chemistry. Except I'm going to fix the chemistry that I got right here, because I can't write a proper symbol. There we go. So it's a proton. So H plus usually is a proton. What would it be called if it was something else? A deuteron, or I guess it would be a tritium. I'm not even sure. I've never heard the word before. But there's a D deuterium and T tritium symbol we can use for the other isotopes. But now I've gotten a little off topic. So, proton donor means H plus is given off. Proton acceptor means you get the H plus. Where is an example of a common Bernstein-Lowry base? An example is ammonia. So ammonia NH3, oh, let me expand out that Lewis dot structure. So we've got ammonia. And we have HCl. They can undergo this kind of reaction. And I think I used these arrows before. The lone pair reaches out to attack H+. And hydrogen can only have one bond at a time. And so the old bond with chlorine breaks. And we end up with two products. The ammonium ion. And chloride. So, in comparison, let's say that we had hydroxide. And let's say we had hydrogen chloride. Then the same kind of reaction can occur. And in this case, we'll get water and chloride. And that's, just to emphasize, why we have this base definition. That since these substances react with acids in the same way, that's why under the corresponds to the Laroid definition. They are both considered bases. Now, kind of interesting experiment that can be done, and so this relates a couple different topics. If you take ammonia, NH3, that's actually a gas. So when we refer to ammonia as a solution, then technically it becomes ammonium hydroxide, but I'm getting too far ahead. But in other words, ammonia itself would be a gas. And it easily evaporates from water if you've ever smelt an ammonia solution. Hydrogen chloride, it is also a gas naturally, and it also easily evaporates as well. So imagine you had a cotton ball that had ammonia solution, and a cotton ball that had hydrogen chloride solution, meaning hydrochloric acid. You put them at the opposite ends of a tube, and at some point, you see a kind of milky white fog form. And that's the ammonium chloride that's formed by them reacting. But it's curious because you can measure where this happened in the tube and math happens. And then you end up figuring out how fast each molecule moved, which turns out to be related to its molar mass, just like we did in the gas chapter. So I should think of that to mention in the gas chapter in the future. And another day I'll come back to that example because it is an interesting example. But at least we got through now our Brunsted-Larry definition of acids and bases, which is the one we're going to use in all of our problems. Now, there is a third definition we'll get to when we formally hit the acid-base chapter. But since this is supposed to be about equilibrium, now that we have enough terminology to talk about acids and bases, let's do an acid-base problem. And here's exactly what a problem might look like. The Ka of acetic acid is 1.76 times 10 to the negative 5. What is the pH of a 0.25 molar aqueous solution of acetic acid? So what is a Ka? Well, it's related to what's called the autoionization of an acid. So just like water can break apart into H+ and OH-, acids all by themselves can break apart into H+ and something else. So hydrochloric acid exists pretty much as 100% as just ions in solution. Now, acetic acid is not the same. So that's what I'm about to get to in this discussion. So fortunately, A for acetic, we can conveniently represent the formula like this, and maybe it'll catch up in a second here. So I have HA reacting to make H+ and A-. So this is the autoionization, and in this equilibrium, in this example at least, everything is in the same solvent. Everything's aqueous. And so that means when we write the equilibrium constant, everything's going to go into it. H+ times A- over HA. This is a special kind of equilibrium constant that's called Ka, and I think I've introduced it before, but let me give you its name. It is the acid dissociation constant. And this might be repetition, but it's still important stuff. If Ka is much greater than 1, that means it's a strong acid. So that means extensive dissociation. much more products than reactants. If you have Ka much less than 1, then that's a weak acid, which means minimal dissociation. Acetic acid is a weak acid, so it doesn't like to dissociate that much. Now, here's where this ice problem comes in. So the logic behind this is you come up with 3 sets of concentration terms. So we have our initial concentration. And we start off assuming the acid has not dissociated. That's why we call this initial concentration, because all we have to do to get the initial concentration is just read the label. If we say 0.025 molar acetic acid, we got 0.25 molar acetic acid. So HA concentration, I'm going to put right here. Now, A minus is what we get after acetic acid dissociates. So what would its initial concentration be? Well, 0 hasn't reacted yet. And H plus should be, well, it's not actually 0, but that's another story once we've learned more. All right. So how will the concentrations change? Well, that's interesting, and I'm sorry there's so much on this page, but I want to be able to see all this at the same time. What is Q going to equal at the beginning of the reaction? Oops, I lost the chat window. Again, the question here was, what would be Q where we have the initial concentrations for reaction? Well, we put in products of reactants, what we get? We get 0 times 0 over 0.25, so Q is equal to 0, which means Q is less than K. So the reaction can only go forward. And it's going to go forward by the acid concentration dropping, the H plus concentration increasing, and then the A minus concentration increasing. So what do we have at the end then? So we'll have 0.25 minus X, X, and X. So initial, change, and end. Now let me show you how we would solve the problem. So take your screenshots on this page, please.
Professor?
Yeah.
Can you explain one more time what the X's mean and where they come from?
It comes from the fact that Q is not equal to K. The fact that you don't have equilibrium. And since Q is less than K, that means the reaction's going to go forward. So those that concept is tied to, why do I have negative X? Now, why do I have negative X plus X plus X? Because if you look at the original reaction equation, there is a unwritten one stoichiometrically in front of each reagent. So if 1HA gets dissociated, you're going to make 1H plus and 1H A minus. So that's why if HA is going to decrease, because you're not to K yet, well, the products are both going to increase. And mole stoichiometry-wise, the reagents will be minus X, and then each of the products will be plus X.
Okay.
And for some of you with your request, I will back up through the notes in a moment for you to be able to take other pictures. But let's move on for now. And let me very quickly recreate the ICE table. So initial change and end for acetic acid, H plus and A minus, acetate. Our values were 0.2500 minus X plus X plus X, and then 0.25 minus X, X, and X for our end concentrations, which are our equilibrium concentrations. So then we say Ka equals HA times A minus, H plus times A minus over HA, which is equal to 1.76 times 10 to negative 5, which is equal to X times X over 0.25 minus X. So then we get 1.76 times 10 to negative 5 is equal to X squared over 0.25 minus X, which we could multiply out, and we would get eventually X squared plus 1.76 times 10 to the negative 5 X minus 4.4 times 10 to the negative 6 is equal to 0, if I did that math in my head right. Which is a quadratic equation, which is lots of fun, right? Are we going to have to do quadratic equations when we solve these problems, Dr. Gray? Only if I've turned into Dr. Evil for a minute. Because there are certain situations where we have to do the full quadratic. But what about this? Since acetic acid is a weak acid, is X small enough? It can be ignored. And the answer is, try it and see. So we're going to rewrite this equation now as 1.76 times 10 negative 5 is equal to X squared over 0.25. So now let's see, did I do that math right? So 1.76 times 10 negative 5 times 0.25 is 4.4 times 10 to negative 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we get X squared is equal to 4.4 times 10 to the negative 6. There is no such thing as negative concentration, so when we take the square root, we only take the positive value. And we get 2.10 times 10 to the negative 1, 2, 3. And that's going to be concentration. And that's going to be equal to the H plus concentration according to the problem. Now notice that this value is less than 1% of the original concentration of acetic acid. And that's a pretty good excuse. To ignore X in the equation up above, you know, where we simplified, that means it was reasonable to do so, less than a 1% error. So now, the last part of the problem would be to determine the pH, which now, that's equal to the negative base 10 log of 2.10 times 10 negative 3, and that ends up being 2.68. And that's our first formal ice problem.